Well, Peter Yarrow, good afternoon. It's great to speak with you today.
I'm glad to talk to you, and I'm excited about coming to your neck of the woods.
Well, Peter, I wanted to start off by asking about your childhood. Not only were you a part of the folk music scene as a young man, but you grew up in New York City as well.
Yes.
Did you have a lot of music around the house growing up?
Oh, I did, absolutely. My mother was a school teacher. She taught English, speech, and drama. She was a person who was multi-talented in these arenas, and she loved learning and culture, and she took me to see Josh White perform, and I fell in love with his music. She took me to see Isaac Stern, and I fell in love with the violin, and I pleaded to take violin lessons, which I did. And she played those 78 records of Burl Ives. Then, at a certain point, I saw Pete Seeger performing at a Hootenanny during the Blacklist time when he couldn't work any place that was a viable venue. But I saw him at a church, the Unitarian Church in Lower Manhattan, and he was with Brownie McGee and Sonny Terry, and I just was overwhelmed. Already by that time going to the High School of Music and Art, where everybody sang and played. I was steeped in the culture of folk music as a high school student, because that was the music of the culture of that school. That was one of the fame schools where you either played a musical instrument and then you auditioned, or you showed them your portfolio of pictures, which I did because I happened to be an art student. And I loved the atmosphere. It was absolutely thrilling. But I was equally interested in music. And when I graduated and went to Cornell, I continued my interest in folk music by becoming the president of the Folk Song Club. And I organized several benefits, for one including Josh White, another one Carlos Montoya, and the third one, Theo Bikel. And then I went on to have an undergraduate instructorship in my senior year in folk music. And I sang in the classroom on Saturdays when they wouldn't have any instruction. They would just have a sing-along. And it became a phenomenon because everybody wanted to sing. And what was dramatic about it was that the culture of Cornell was not a progressive place at the time. And it was dramatic to see that these people who were so steeped in the fraternity system and seemed to be so insensitive to these dimensions of a progressive view, when they were singing, opened their hearts. And they became, instead of hyper-competitive, snotty, snobby elitists, they became transformed, singing these songs, and without even realizing it. And in years later, when I would meet them, they would say, well, that course was the most important thing that happened to me at Cornell. It opened my heart.
Wow.
And I realized that was happening. And because of that, when I graduated with my degree, instead of going into experimental psychology, I went to Greenwich Village and played in the coffee shops.
New York City's had a cultural magnetism for centuries, going back to when it was founded. But the folk scene in the 1960s, not only in retrospect, but it seems even at the time, was startlingly vibrant.
It was. It was a hotbed of cultural growth and spiritual growth and excitement just on a grassroots level. This was not a top-down alteration. It happened to a large degree because the cultural expressions of a more caring society were expressed through the arts, not through verbal polemic, not through haranguing, and not through logic, but through the heart. And it was that kind of heart and inspiration that fueled the later civil rights movement, the women's movement, environmental movement, etc.
It certainly seems like it was a very collaborative, encouraging scene.
it was thrilling. I didn't know anybody, not one single person in Greenwich Village that wasn't positive, inspired, filled with hope and determination. Nobody cared anything about success. None of us really thought that was the point. We only wanted to do what we were doing because we were young and we were thrilled by it.
Wow. Would you tell us a little bit about the alchemy in the early days of Peter, Paul, and Mary? How soon after singing together did you realize you had something quite special?
It was instantaneous. Albert Grossman, who was the manager of Peter, Paul, and Mary, but previously was my manager, had suggested that we should make a group. He felt that would be a fantastic thing to do. The way we chose the three of us was we tried out various people. And when I sang with Mary, it was okay, but nothing to write home about, just our two voices. So we went over to Noel Paul's place. She had already met him, and he had accompanied her at the Gaslight, where he ran the entertainment, and sat down, and we decided to sing a song. But Noel didn't know folk songs. He was not a folk singer. In fact, he'd had a rock and roll band in high school. He knew jazz. He knew pop music, early rock and roll, and he was marvelous, but he sang more like a crooner. And he didn't know any of the songs Mary and I knew. So what did we sing? We had to find a song we all knew. We sang Mary Had a Little Lamb. And no matter who took the lead, and the other two would then do harmony parts, the sound was magic. It was not magic with Mary and me alone. It was not magic with Paul and me alone. But when the three of us did it together, it was magic. And I called Albert Grossman and I said, this is it. There's no mistake. We're starting to rehearse tomorrow. And we did for 7 months. And then we had 12 songs. And we went to the Bitter End. That was a coffee house in Greenwich Village. And started performing. And the rest was history.
How fortunate that Albert Grossman planted that seed by suggesting that you would do well in a group.
I really trusted his judgment. He said, you would have all the virtues of being able to do what you could do as a solo, because this would not be a single group identity that would obscure your individual talents. In fact, we would highlight the differences and the specialness of each person's point of view and voice. And he did that by creating an auditory separation of the voices, which was not done previously. Instead of putting the voices in the center, he stereo split them so that I was on one side, Noel Paul was on the other, and Mary was in the middle. And the intimacy of that was such that you could hear our individual voices, you could hear what we were playing on the guitars individually. It was amazing.
That's a rather remarkable concept. So often at the time, monophonic recordings were touted as a way to blend voices together better. But here Albert Grossman was saying instead, no, let's separate your voices so we can hear their individuality.
He was a genius. If you listen to the difference between our mono and our stereo album, there's a world of difference. Because you can walk inside as if you're standing in the middle of the three of us when we're singing. And that's the way we sing.
Kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again.
Your career, not only as a performer, but as an interpreter of song, a songwriter, and also now the passing on of the folk song tradition with your books and the records that you've made, which part of it to you now is the most valuable?
The most important part of my work is my advocacy and activism. For 15 years, I have been dedicated to something called Operation Respect, which is a nonprofit that focuses on creating an environment in schools that's caring and loving, that's like the High School of Music and Art, one of the FAME schools, where kids accept each other of all races, of all backgrounds, and where we, through the use of social and emotional learning pedagogy developed by Educators for Social Responsibility, and music, where kids sing together, we create an environment in which there's far less bullying, disrespect, ridicule, and emotional and physical violence.
Don't laugh at me. Don't call me names. Don't get your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes, we're all the same. Someday we'll all have perfect wings. Don't laugh at me.
And this is a continuation of what I was doing at Cornell, where by using music in conjunction with other tools, the heart of people is exposed and their capacity to be caring is accentuated and elevated. And there is nothing more satisfying or more wonderful for me to do. And when I come to sing in your neck of the woods, that's what I'm going to be doing. In fact, almost all the songs will be songs that people will sing along with me. I'll be doing Puff the Magic Dragon, Leaving on a Jet Plane, Blowing in the Wind, If I Had a Hammer. I'll be singing with my son, who also plays the washed-up bass. And we will not only sing these songs, we'll take a trip into the history of what I have experienced so that people will see that this is not only something that existed long ago, but that its importance and relevance now is extraordinarily meaningful. Every time I sing and bring people together through this music, the important moments are those that we create together, where every person who sings says, I had a little bit to do with making that moment happen. And it makes me realize how wonderful it is to experience this moment of caring, of togetherness, of community, of peace, of love, of joy.
There's a wonderful common thread in what you did at Cornell, what you did with Peter Paul and Mary, what you do in concert, your work with Operation Respect. Singing in a group together not only asks you to contribute yours, but to listen to the other voice. And that's sort of the fulcrum on which understanding is balanced.
That's right, exactly.
Well, Peter, I really admire that mission and of passing on the folk music tradition.
Thank you so much. It is a great pleasure for me to come up to your neck of the woods, the place from which Bobby Dylan hails, the genius that changed music in our country and in the world. And I will honor him and his extraordinary work at the concert, and I will ask the children in the audience to come on stage, even if I have to redefine the word children for anybody under 50.
Oh, good. That means I can include myself as a child, too.
We have a great history. We who were part of this movement, Bobby and I and many others. And I will be reliving part of it and carrying it forward when I am with you.
It's been a real pleasure talking with you, Peter.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Bye-bye.